For us, it was survival, you know, survival mode. For me, survival mode is a little different because since I was a kid, like, I just wanted to dance. Growing up, my moms used to support me, you know, like we had a group when we first started, it was called the New York Puppeteers. And my mom used to make all of our suits from the shirt to the pants to the bow tie. You know what I'm saying? Because it was popping back then. So she was always like pushing me. And the second motivation was Float. Like when Float started coming to Boston, he would stay with me and we would just stay motivated. We just had this dream, you know, just being like just dancers, traveling the world and all these things, you know. In the 80s, when you have that in your mind, you know, you're like, oh, shit, is this possible? And just being able to be with a crew that was mad, they just grind hard. Like Cisco and Mike, who ran our crew, were just super hustlers. They kept us going. I remember Mike had moved away and Cisco took over, and just being around him, hustling all the time, getting the shows. You know, I kind of like learned that hustle from them and it was over.
Welcome to Souls of Hip Hop,
a podcast for hip hop heads that aims to bring inspiring people together to share their wisdom, passion, and unique stories. My name is Candy.
And I'm DJ Razorcut.
And together we are Solidarity.
Connecting souls organically.
What's up, fam? Due to a technical incident, we were forced to take a few months to revamp our equipment and re-energize our souls. We are excited to bring you this new interview with Leanski as we are celebrating the 40th anniversary of Boston's legendary Floorlords crew this weekend.
You can find all the event details in our show notes. Thank you to all who have contributed to the Floorlords legacy. We hope you enjoy this episode with the big cheeseburger himself, Lino Delgado, aka Leanski.
How would your parents describe what you do?
I grew up without a father. My mother and my father broke up when I was six, and we moved to Boston around, like, shortly after that. I had a stepfather who brought us to Boston, and shortly after that, like, maybe like 2-3 years, my mom's ended up breaking up with him because he was just an abusive guy. He would get drunk and just do craziness, but she broke up with him. So I, you know, my mom's just very supportive. My uncles and my cousins, when they started moving to Boston, we didn't have no family in Boston. So after those like 3 years we was with my stepfather, we would go back and forth to New York. My stepfather would, for those 3 years, would like go back and forth every weekend to New York. Because my mother was like, look, I have no friends here. I don't know anybody here. We have to go back and forth. But people started breaking in our house. When we would leave, they started like, it was weird because maybe like 2 or 3 months, people would get the gist of us going to New York and they would break in our house. We would come back home. Our house would be ransacked. We would move to a different neighborhood, do the same thing, break into our house. So we would move to a different neighborhood to the point where it was just like, all right, we can't move. And then that's when our cousins started coming to Boston to visit us because we wasn't able to travel back to New York like that. We would do it every once in a while, you know what I'm saying? But we couldn't have, it wasn't a frequent thing. Yeah, it was crazy, for sure. I mean, that's not even nothing compared to growing up. I look at hip hop now and I'm like, man, growing up as a youngster in hip hop is traumatizing. You know what I'm saying? Just what we had to go through. Like people these days don't even know how upfront people were back then. You know, so a lot of people look at OGs now and they're like, yo, like, you know, some of them are a little too rugged, too rough. You know what I'm saying? But I think a lot of us grew up like that. You know, so sometimes there's no chill, you know what I'm saying? Because people don't really know how we grew up, you know what I'm saying? Like, they don't know what we had to go through.
Before you were six, were you living in New York or where were you living?
I was living in New York. I was born in Long Island, Brentwood, Long Island, New York. But when we was going back and forth, we were staying in Manhattan in the Bronx because my mom didn't want to see my real father. She was trying to stay away from Long Island because that was mostly his family. Most of our family lived in the city. I'm half Puerto Rican, half Dominican. My father's side, you know, like his whole family lived in Long Island, which was all the, you know, the Puerto Rican side of my family. So my mom's family, who they lived in Manhattan in the Bronx, the Dominican side. Mm-hmm. So that's who we went more to visit was her family. She wasn't really trying to, you know, stay connected with his family. She was trying to, like, get away from him.
I think it's inspiring to hear how our elders turned the struggles of their youth into impactful art forms and movements. Lino, you are very talented. We heard that before you were into breaking, you were big into BMX. What can you tell us about that?
The craziest thing was I started out really young, like riding BMX. You know, like we used to go to block parties. I would drive up with my BMX. I was really into just like stuntman shit, like quarter pipes, you know, jumping over cars. Like I was just a maniac as a kid. That was my thing. Before I started like really getting serious into dancing, I got sponsored by this bike company. Cause we would go, me and my homie Kurt would go to all of the BMX racetracks. But we would enter the competition, but we would just do like dumb shit. They had like these curves around the corners and we would jump off the curves, in the middle of the race, jump off the curb and just do crazy shit. Jump over cars. Like, we were just wild. Like, we were just wild. So we wouldn't get in the competition to win. We would get in the competition to just show off, jump off something. Like, we wasn't good at racing. We were just good at jumping over shit and jumping over people. Like, we were just daredevils. So we got sponsored by this bike shop called Day's Bike Shop in Milton, Massachusetts. I think they're still there. We would just like do that. So people liked that, like that we would just come in and just jump off shit and just do dumb shit, you know? So they loved that. It was a short-lived sponsorship because that winter, my brother, he had started a group called the New York Puppeteers. And one of the kids, who's actually my best friend, Tyrone, he ended up moving. So my brother and them, they needed someone to perform with them. And I would always come in and practice with them, but I wasn't serious. I was too much into my BMX thing. Like, I would go to block parties and house parties and pop with them, you know, but I wasn't a part of their crew. That wasn't even on my mind. And then they ended up conning me to do this talent show with them. And it was over after that. After that, like, my feeling for like dance just became so much bigger. Just like being able to perform that day, we won the competition and we came outside and it was like everybody from all different neighborhoods would come out. And I don't know how many people it was there, but it seemed like it was like 1,000 people outside. And people were like screaming, and then these guys, there was so much energy going on at that time that this guy tried to like take a trophy. You know, there was another crew called Chain Reaction who was like our rivals from the same neighborhood. And their brothers were in this gang. And they tried to take our trophy. And this guy came and just, I guess he kind of like just chumped them, like punked them off. And then walked us home with like all these people following us home. So it was like that much energy in that first reaction to doing a talent show. I was like, holy shit, this is what I want to do.
How old were you, Lino?
I was probably like 13, maybe like 13.
Yeah, so it was crazy.
My introduction to like performing and becoming serious and leaving the next thing alone. I still ride bikes out here too.
Okay.
I used to roller skate too. I roller skate out here now too. I went from skateboarding at like 8 to like roller skating at like 10, you know, and then bikes became my thing.
We are about to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the crew, and it really feels like a family reunion. What do you think contributes to the legacy of Floor Lords?
Our crew was about, if you felt like family, you were family. It didn't matter how much skill you had. Like, from the beginning, when I first started, I had no skills. I started getting better, and then there was not a lot of people. The people who were already dancing were basically people we were, you know, going up against. You know, our rivals or people, other crews. So it was like, in order to keep the community going, it was about you teaching other kids. And that was my whole life, was always teaching kids. My brother was the guy who was probably the best. Nas was the best. He was way better than me at everything. My brother was better than me as a DJ. My brother rapped in Spanish and English. He did graffiti. He played like 10 instruments. I just did, you know, like roller skating, skateboarding, BMX. Like, I was more into that stuff. And that's where I was. Like, the street dances were street dances. Like, that's what it was for us. You know what I'm saying? Like, we went to all the block parties and learned all the street dances, all the new dances that came out. When breaking and popping and all those dances came out, You know, we started doing that, like breaking. We had two cousins that would come up and teach us before we even knew about popping. They would teach us how to break. And my cousin Chino and Eddie from the Bronx, they would come up and teach us how to dance, you know, on the floor. We didn't know what the hell we were doing. You know, they would just come up and they would be bored as hell because in New York, they would be out in the street dancing. In Boston, we lived in a racist neighborhood. We lived in Dorchester at this time. And me and my brother was like 8 and 7, you know what I'm saying? So they would come up and they would just break in the house. They would be bored because their mother wouldn't let them come out the house. You know, we lived in this crazy neighborhood. So they would just break in our house. And we would watch them and they'd be like, you want to learn? And they would teach us a couple of moves here and there. But me and my brother weren't really serious into it. You know, it wasn't until later that, you know, they would come up. And then one time, my cousin Chino didn't come up. Just my cousin Eddie came up. And he had went to a club. You know, he was a little older. So he wanted to go out dancing. So he went out dancing. And one time he was coming home. The station next to our house was Fields Corner. And I guess he got off the train at Fields Corner and was walking home. And he got jumped. All these white kids jumped him and beat him up. So my aunt was like, you're not, she stopped coming to Boston. She just basically was like, I'm gonna stop coming to Boston. That was our short-lived, like, breaking career. You know what I'm saying? You know, we got a little older, like 9 or 8, we started going to block parties, and popping was a big thing, you know, because popping was on Soul Train. So that's where we picked up the popping thing, was in Soul Train. And then we would go to block parties and pop. And then they had this crazy hoodlum guy. His name was Popeye. And he was from our neighborhood in Four Corners, Dorchester area. He would come to our block and he would do the kip-ups and the kicks. And people would laugh at him. People would laugh at him. So we would be like, oh, we ain't doing that shit. Like, we're not going to get on the floor. We'll just stay up top, you know. So we pop. We don't want to go down on the floor. Because at first we would look at him. And we'd be like, oh, should we get on the floor? Because we would have ciphers, like, you know, circles, we called them back then. It was a circle. People would pop, and then he would come in and do that. So me and my brother would look at each other and be like, but then people would just start laughing at him. Ah, so he was like this crazy, like, buffed, like, little, you know, black kid. Like, well, he was an older guy. He was an older guy, but he was, like, stocky little guy. And people would laugh at him, so we'd be like, oh, hell no, we're not doing that. You're laughing at him, we ain't gonna do that. So we kind of came up in the era of that. We kind of came up like that, you know what I'm saying? And how I really got into breaking was a little later on. I came from a lot of different people, so I can't really say myself, like Mike, Cisco, you know, Flo, Chino, Brian. There's so many people that I came from that I actually learned so much from. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes you're around so many people and so many people that inspire you, but there's always bits and pieces in your life, you know, and bits and pieces in them that you kind of like try to take, you know what I'm saying, out of everybody. And that's how I am even with the young generation. The young generation is what made me, I guess, a more humble person, because I was able to watch and listen to them and humble myself to listen to a lot of the younger generation talk to me about how they felt and how they felt about people. And I kind of like was able to listen to them and was able to be like, okay, I understand how you look at things now. And it kind of made me a better person. That made me better. Sometimes when you could learn from, you know, your elders, a lot of different things. Like, I know for sure, like, what humbled our whole crew the most was battling Chino and Brian. Battling those guys, because before battling those guys, we had no chill. We were wild. We were like, we used to battle everybody in Boston. Like, back in the days, like I was talking about earlier, like, it was so upfront, so confrontational, which, you know, when I look at now is traumatizing, but we were just ready to battle everywhere. I walked around with a radio every day, ready to battle, and was being called out every day, damn near. Just imagine walking down the street and you're walking with your radio, listening to some music, a bus pulls up at the bus stop, you know, you watch the bus stop and your rivals get off the bus and start walking towards you, and you're like, oh, it's on right now. You know what I'm saying? Like, you already know you're about to battle right now on concrete. It was like, oh, okay. you know, this is it. Like, you already knew you was about to start a battle. And the battle wasn't like, oh, you want a battle? It was like, yo, whack, let's battle right now. You know, and we'd be like, well, all right, let's put the radio down. And you're just going head to head with these guys, you know. So it would be like that. That's how it was. When you went to a block party, it was just like up front. People were just coming at you like, yo. It wasn't like they just come at you, push you. You know, back then it was terrifying. You know what I'm saying? Because sometimes, like, I just wanted to dance. I was trying to dance to stay away from, because my brother was into, like, the craziness. So I was trying to stay away from him. You know, in our neighborhood, you know, it was like neighborhood jams. Like, people was like, people come in our neighborhood to cause any trouble, we're going at it. So it was like no chill. Like, you had to, like, be nice to the other person who you were battling, so your whole neighborhood don't jump on this person.
What neighborhood was that? What neighborhood was that?
The first neighborhood was Four Corners. That was my neighborhood. Corona Street was like my first neighborhood. That's when we started going to block parties. But the neighborhood that basically like solidified us as hip hop was Lower Roxbury, which was the South End. Lenox Street Projects, Hammond Street, which was where I moved on. But those Lenox Street Projects was like Derby Park. That was where they did the block parties. But that neighborhood came together. You know, when we went to different neighborhoods, like, that whole neighborhood came. Back in those days, it wasn't like now. Like, now people don't really go from different neighborhoods. Like, if there's a block party in Jamaica Plain, it's mostly people from Jamaica Plain in that neighborhood. Back in our days, it was like, Jamaica Plain's doing block party. All right, Lenox Street is going to Heath Street Projects. And so it was like, you know, you would come with your neighborhood and there would be a battle or a circle, you know, and it was like your neighborhood. So it was like, you're battling people from this neighborhood, but your whole neighborhood's behind you and something could pop off. And the thing about it for us, it was like, we didn't know who had a knife from our neighborhood, who had a gun from our neighborhood. So we were like, oh man, like, when you went to a jam, it was like that. Mm. Like, you didn't know what was going to happen. You know what I'm saying? So it was like, either keep it peace, as peaceful as you can. I was telling this dude the other day that, you know, I was cool with a lot of different kids because I taught a lot of kids from different neighborhoods. I remember one time I was battling this kid from this other neighborhood. You know, it was a friendly battle. It wasn't nothing serious, but he had did something. And one of the kids from my neighborhood just punched him. Bow! And I'm like, yo, no, yo, that's my homie. Yo, that's my homie. He was like, oh, why you do that to you? I was like, yo, it's a battle, bro. Like, chill out. But that's how it was. It was that wild. Like, you know, so it was like when you went, and as a crew, like, our crew was wild. You know what I'm saying? So when we battled Float and Chino and them, like, they were so skillful. They just burnt the hell out of us. Before that, we were going back and forth to New York. And at the time, like, we didn't know, like, all these crews were, like, traveling. Like, New York City Breakers was in Europe. You know, Rocksteady was in Japan. You know, Dynamic Rockers was in Vienna somewhere. You know what I'm saying? So you don't know all these top-notch crews. You know, Incredible Breakers was in Israel or something. You don't even know these amazing B-boys are like somewhere else, some other country. You know, this is like 1983, 1984. Like, these crews are traveling already. You know, these crews been traveling since like probably like 1982, 1981. Me and Mike from our crew were from New York. So we would go back and forth. You know, I have family in 137, 138 in Spanish Harlem, family in the South Bronx. So some of our crew members was going out there already, going to the Roxy, going to the Fun House. And we would go to the Roxy and, you know, we'd see B-boys in there and we would be like, okay, these guys are pretty dope, you know, but we felt like they weren't that much better than us. So when we first seen Flo and Chino, we've never seen anybody as good as them. You know what I'm saying? They just blew our mind. So we were like, holy shit. So that was our first humbling, like, experience. Then traveling back to New York, like, oh shit, we gotta go back. Like, we're missing something. We're missing, like, the real cats. So we ended up bumping into them again. And then it was just like meeting them and how good they were and how humble they were. You know, they were amazing, but they were mad humble. You really had to make them mad to bring out that rawness in them. And then just watching how humble they were to us, we were like, yo, these are the most humbling human beings and the best in the world, you know? So that humbled us a lot. Being around them, you know, and then Float coming back and forth, and Chino, Ness from Incredible Breakers, Nasty Ness was the one who gave me my name, Leanski. You know, and these guys were amazing to us. So that humbled us a lot, and that made me go out and teach more kids in the neighborhood to keep the culture growing, you know, in Boston.
What's special about Ness?
Ness was from Float's neighborhood. Float basically came from a lot of different people. So Float came from Fast Break. Like, Float had his own crew called Royal Rockers, you know, which his brother CSO, Jeff, so many. I can't even name so many of those guys because I'm just going to get into who inspired Float, you know, because he came up with the Royal Rockers, but then he bumped into like Fast Break, Icy Ice, and Kid Freeze. Those three right there, back in the 80s, those guys were like already top notch. Fast Break was already like the master in like style, you know, one of the masters of New York in style. You know, when it comes to like style, it's like Kenny, Legs. I mean, there's a few others, you know what I'm saying, that, you know, but those, when you know about style, like those three, like off top, they must be mentioned. Now you have Chino and Brian, who are also on a whole different level of style and power and flavor. So those five were like key people who inspired Float, the ones who basically took Float to the next level. You're on a whole different level of being creative, learning from all of Ness, Chino, Brian, Peanut, Austin Paul. These guys were on a whole different level. Things I see people doing these days, like just imagine seeing someone doing one-handed tracks, hollow backs. Like, I'm telling you right now, like, what I've seen these guys do, like, I've never seen anybody. There's a lot of people, I ask, like, B-Boys right now to do, like, a Float combo, and I'm not going to call it a simple combo. But I've asked Iron Monkey, I've asked Legacy to do a combination that Float has done, and these are, like, some of the top, you know, and they can't even do the combo. I asked my nephew. Float has asked my nephew to do a combo for him, and my nephew's like, I can't do that, Float. You know, just being around all these guys, to me, was on a whole different level. And just the things, like I was watching Austin Paul do like 1090s in the 80s. I'm gonna tell you right now, I would tell people that I've seen this and they would be like, that's impossible. Nobody could do this. Now people are doing it. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, nah, I seen these dudes do this. Like, people don't believe me, but I'm like, yo, I'm telling you, I've watched, I've seen people do this. You know what I'm saying? I've seen Kid Freeze do some amazing things I've never seen anybody do. Kid Freeze is amazing. You know, these guys are older now. They stopped breaking for a while, but I've seen these guys do some amazing things. Like, Float used to do tracks both ways back in the 80s, like both ways. I'm gonna tell you a combination that I still haven't seen anybody do. Float would, he would do two tracks, go this way. He would head slide the other way, do two tracks that way while he's walking towards you. Then he would go back to this arm, do two tracks. He would slide over on his head, do two tracks while he's walking towards you. He's coming at you. I've never seen anybody do that. Never, till this day. And smooth, with control.
Yeah, he always had control.
You know what I'm saying? So this is like a move I tell people to do that. Like, I can't do that.
Even in Float's workshops, he would always talk about control, like being able to know exactly what you control.
That's how they were all. I remember one time we entered a talent show, me, Tron, and Shallow, and Float. Me and Float were the breakers. They were doing popping, and we did solos. So I remember Float was doing tracks. He did this long combination, and he was about to fall off the stage. And we're like, Flo! We're like screaming because we think he's going to fall off the stage. Why does he does a hollow back off the stage? Off the stage. We were like, yo, my God. And held it and just laughed at us. Just laughed at us. Like, because, you know, we're like looking. He's looking at us and he's laughing at us. We're like, oh, shit. You know, so I've seen them do some amazing things. So for me, you know, not to say that these kids are doing some impossible things now. I can't take that away from them. But they were just on a whole different level of what they were doing. You know, what they were doing is just on a different creativity type things.
They were kids too.
Yeah, they were kids. Yeah, for sure. Like, we were all like 14, 15, 16.
So before you met Float and Chino and the Incredible Breakers, you were like smoking everyone. Like when you went to Club California?
Yeah, we had a rival called Unique Dominoes, and that was our rival. Like they were a little older than us. Those guys battled us everywhere they seen us. Anywhere. I mean, you know, our big thing, how we came together was through New York Puppeteers and MBT, which is Massachusetts Break Team. And what they did was they hit in the street. They would make money in the street. So we met at an audition in 81, and then we started kicking and we started like, you know, hanging out with them. They ended up, you know, asking us to go make some money with them. And we ended up going with them. Making money, you know, was actually like what people call hitting, was just making money on the street. And that's how we came together. My brother and the other guy in my group, Tony, they started hanging out, drinking, smoking, hanging out with the gangs and stuff. And that kind of pushed me into hanging out with MBT. So that's how we came up with the Floor Lords. So this other crew, Unique Dominoes, they were our rivals. So it was us and them like going at it all the time. Like we would battle all the time, anywhere. They had started this crew called HBO, Homeboys Only, because everybody, we was battling everybody. So everybody came at me. They actually, one time I was with my students, I had another crew called Floor Lords too. And it was like all, they were all like from 8 to like 13, 14 years old. That was my younger crew, that kids that I took from different neighborhoods and I taught. And it was 12 of us and 12 of them. We was practicing at the Blackstone. So everybody would walk to Dover Station, who lived in like Dorchester, Randolph, and Brockton, which was most of the crew lived out in that area. And we went our way. So I had the 12 kids with me, and I'm with Noli, and we're walking. I'd say about 6 crews just ran up on us and was like, yo, let's battle. And I was ready to battle. And these kids were super ill at the time. These kids, they were like on a whole different level because they was already practicing with us. They were practicing with Float. So they was amazing kids. We were like ready to battle. We were like, all right, let's go. And Noli was basically like, yo, you know what? Let's not even battle these guys. Because at the time, if we would have burnt these guys, it was like 5 crews, they probably would have jumped us, beat us down. You know what I'm saying? So we ended up walking away from that battle. But, you know, it was mad times they came at us.
And at what point did you realize that what you were doing could be viable to do as a profession?
I had no clue. What happened was in the 90s, Cisco used to manage us, which he came from our crew. He stopped dancing and he just became a manager. We had got a building from the city for $1 with this nonprofit organization called Boston City Lights. And we started working this building to make money, you know what I'm saying? So we did shows and we worked in this building. Cause at the time, like we stopped dancing in the street cause you know, we started booking shows in the street. And then I remember one time, like someone came to book us and they were like, yo, I want to book you for a show. But he was like, why should I pay this much money when I could go pay $1 and watch you in the street? So we started doing shows. We stopped hitting the street. Cisco was a manager. Cisco stopped dancing. We got this building. So now we're working construction. We're all laborers because the guy promised us that we would have a dance space for us to go dance and teach kids and all this stuff. So working in this building, as we're working, Cisco wanted to become a plumber. He had to go to school to become a plumber. So then once he became a plumber, he didn't want to do it no more. We were doing shows late night at all these clubs, and we were doing like 4 clubs a week. We were coming home at like 2 in the morning. He had to get up at like 5 in the morning to go to work. So he ended up coming to me and saying, look, I don't want to do this no more. I don't want to manage you guys no more. So, you know, I didn't know how to book shows. I wasn't like a hustler. I learned a lot from him. Like now that I realize, like I learned a lot from him. But at the time, I was just teaching kids because we had already built the school, Boston City Lights. So I was already teaching kids there. At the time, it was only 3 of us. It was me, Archie, and Flex. I didn't know how to book shows. So I just went back to teaching for like a year. I just taught. Archie was from Providence, so Archie just went back home and they were still practicing. Like, I was just teaching kids. I was going to the gym, working out. You know, I was getting all big. And they were still practicing. And then they came back after that year. They were like, yo, Lino, like, we want to start doing shows again. Like, we missed doing shows. And at this time, I had 2 nephews, which was Ilton and Jonathan, which later on became Flight and J Quest. So I was teaching them at Boston City Lights. So then I was like, all right, I'll figure it out. So we started like asking to do shows. A lot of people knew who we were. I just started booking shows with us five. So we basically kept going. Then some of the older members started coming back, Lefty, Shallow, Tron. And now we had six of the older dancers that came back. And then plus the two kids, which was Ilton and Jonathan. We just started booking shows. So we got a community center a little later on called the Hennigan School. And then we started doing shows. And then we started getting more kids to come to that school. You know, we had like 60 kids at that school at a time. And then a lot of people would do meetings in that school. And they seen us breaking in the cafeteria. And they would come in there, and all of a sudden, like, news started coming in there and doing stories on us. Newspapers, like, I don't know how the word got out, but basically I had, like, 60 kids from all different neighborhoods coming to this community center and learning. Then I created, like, my own play. I got inspired early on from Get Original and Pure Movement, Rennie Harris and Pure Movement from Philadelphia. I got inspired to do my own plays. Then I started teaching in schools. I really didn't have a clue. It was just, things were just happening. I was just catering to teaching, catering to shows. Things just started growing out of nowhere, doing B-boy events, you know, DJing, parties. It just became like a lifestyle. You know, you just don't see it till it becomes a lifestyle. You know, going to jams, being called a judge, DJ, you know, it just becomes your lifestyle. And you don't really notice it, you know. Then I started like helping with nonprofits, teaching hip hop through nonprofits, you know, creating my own programs, you know, teaching hip hop. But you're just in survival mode all the time. That's how it comes together.
I want to kind of stay with like the early days.
Uh-huh.
Can you tell us about the first Floor Lords anniversary where you actually called out Lords of Illusion on the flyer?
Oh, man. All right. So Lords of Illusion, basically, they came from a member. This guy, Cheeky, used to dance with us. And I'm just going to say, like, girls weren't comfortable around them. So they came to me. They were like, look, man, like, you know, we're not comfortable with this guy in the group. At the time, we had four girls in the group. Before they even got involved in the crew, he was a part of the crew. And he was always, you know, just talking to girls all the time. You know what I'm saying? And when you had a professional gig, like, you got to be professional. And he was, you know, he was always, like, talking to girls. So I kind of saw, you know, why the girls felt uncomfortable. So I was like, look, man, like, I think you need to start your own thing. And I was like, I help you start your own crew, but things ain't working out. You know what I'm saying? And this crew, but I help you. Because at the time, it was only us. We were the only crew in Boston. They were like other dancers that were dancing, like, but they were solo dancers. So he basically started getting those guys together. And that was it. They started their own crew, which was LOI. And I know this is my story. I know there's always three parts of a story. You know, it's going to be his story. It's going to be my story, and it's going to be the truth. I'm going to call this my truth. They can call it their truth. You know what I'm saying? So they started a crew. At first, we were, you know, we were cool crews. It was LOI, Lords of Illusion, and it was Floor Lords. And Lords of Illusion was more from the North Shore. They were from, like, Chelsea and Lynn, and I think Chicky was from Lowell. So that was the crew. We would go to events, you know, like hip-hop events, because there wasn't no battles, nothing like that. And we would dance together. It was cool. There was another member in our crew called Crazy Freddy, who Float used to, back in the 90s, Float used to teach. And in the 90s, like 91, like, we would go to this house club called the M Club in the Loft. We had a club called the Loft, and we would go hang out at the Loft all the time. And there was this kid named Vinny and Freddy. So they used to dance. They were like hip-hop dancers and house dancers. So Crazy Freddy would hang out with Float all the time. Float was mad humble, so Float would teach him, you know, how to do, like, hollow backs in 1990s. That's what I remember. This was at a time when we was getting back together. I seen Crazy Freddy, and I told him, yo, we starting the Floor Lords again. We were starting to perform again. So I told him to come be a part of our group. So, you know, him and Freddy were in the crew. So it was me, Ilton, Jonathan, my two nephews, Shallow, Tron, Act One, Lefty, Malcolm, Flex, Chicky, and Crazy Freddy. When we let Chicky go, Freddy basically ended up leaving the crew. And all of a sudden, I don't know what happened, but he became part of Lords of Illusion. And that's where the tension became. He left our crew and he created that tension between us and Lords of Illusion. And that's how we started like battling. And I remember we started working with this other crew, this younger crew called Spiders, and this other crew called Nightcrawlers. And Lords of Illusion used to go practice with Nightcrawlers. They were from Lawrence, Massachusetts. So one time I had did like a jam, like a little jam in Heath Street Projects, like a little jam. And Nightcrawlers came and they got to meet us and, you know, they got real cool with us. And then we started going to practice with them. And then Lords of Illusion stopped coming to their practice. You know, so we were like, all right, whatever. But then sometimes some of the members would go to their practice and I guess they would say certain things to them. And then I don't know how, but it got back that they were kind of like talking trash. And I was just like, you know what? Let's just nip this in the bud right now. I'm going to put this on the flyer. If they come, they get in for free and we battle. We did our anniversary. I think it was called, the jam was called Survival of the Illest. And it was a competition and I just put it on the flyer. And all of a sudden I get a phone call like, yo, why you put us on a flyer like this and that? And I was like, yo, y'all talking trash. Like, this is it. This is where the trash stops. You know what I'm saying? And then that's how the battle came about.
So for a long time, Floor Lords was like unbeatable. Like you guys could just smoke anyone in the whole region. And all of a sudden, Float and Chino and Brian started to pop up. What was that feeling for you when all of a sudden you started to meet these guys that could actually compete with you?
They were doing more than competing with us. They were demolishing us. So it wasn't even like competition. It was a humble experience for me, for all of us, you know, as a crew. Like I said earlier, like those guys were just mad humbles in the 80s. In the 80s, you know, everybody was real, real, real hardcore. Like it was about dissing people, you know, it was about belittling the other dancers. You know what I'm saying? So if you wasn't that good, people were just coming at you. You know what I'm saying? Like you're whack to your face. You suck. Like it was hardcore. You're a toy. You know, it was like they would come at you like that. So meeting these guys who were on a whole different level and they were mad humble, we were like, oh shit, you know. And then just hanging out with them and being in their presence, you know, meeting all these other amazing dancers, Fast Break, Icy Ice, Kid Freeze, Rob, Scrambling Feet, meeting other crews from being around those guys, that basically took us to a whole different level. You know what I'm saying? As far as humble, being humble, and learning, you know what I'm saying? Learning what hip hop was really about was, it wasn't about biting. So it wasn't like I could break like Float. You know what I'm saying? Like he could teach me a move, but it was like, all right, you teach me that move. Now, Lino, you got to figure out how to make that move your move, you know? And in the 80s, you know, 80, 84. So that's how it was in those days.
You've been one of the main contributors of bringing together the main promoters within the US. From my understanding, you introduced like Steve Graham to Cross and to Mex and like brought together the different promoters to create a whole new movement within the US. Can you talk about that?
I think I was inspired by a lot of those promoters. Like Pro-Am was a big inspiration for me. Coming to Pro-Am was like one of my biggest inspirations as far as throwing jams. I started doing little jams. You know, after that, Cross and those guys were already doing jams. B-Boy Summit was already going on. London and them was doing their own jams back to Mecca, back in New York. I was just doing little jams. I got really cool with a lot of those guys was because I would go to their jams and they would come to my jams and I would kind of like throw jams with them. I was actually in a meeting at which you was a part of it. Candy was a part of what was the name of that? The other organization that started?
The UBA, United Breaking Association.
UBA.
2013, yeah.
So what had happened was Flo came to me and was like, yo, there's a organization who's trying to, you know, because Flo always knew I always had connections with all these different promoters, all the dancers. Like I always knew all the dancers. I had really close connections with dancers, with all the younger dancers, with all the OGs. So Flo told me about the UBA. So he was like, Lino, I think you need to be a part of the UBA. You know, get on this conference call with these people and bring some of your people because they're trying to get people involved. I remember getting on the call with them and I invited everybody that I guess they were trying to get to this phone call and nobody would go jump on this call. And I guess Flo kind of like knew if I got involved, I would bring, you know, all the rest of the people because a lot of people always trusted me. I always kind of did things for the community. I was always community involved. Like anything I tried to, like through sponsors, through whatever, I always tried to help everybody else. If I can grow, let's make the scene grow. So that's all I ever wanted was a scene to come together and grow because, you know, that was another thing about back in the days was we had sponsors. Like we had Converse, we had Puma, and we had some other Capizio. And us being mad ghetto, you know, we never really kept the connection going because we were mad ghetto. And I'm sure Rocksteady, New York City Breakers, Dynamic Rockers, like Dynamic Breakers, like I'm sure they had opportunities, but we were mad ghetto. So those opportunities didn't grow. You know what I'm saying? I always wanted, you know, the breaking scene, like the younger generation to grow. Like that was my dream was if we could bring the community together, maybe, you know, the younger generation can live off dance. That's why I always kept that connection going. So that's why I always try to spread whatever connection I had. So when I brought them to that meeting, I remember at the end of the meeting, it was a bunch of people that I brought to that meeting that was like, yo, thank you, Lino, at the end. They kept on saying thank you, Lino, for the invite. And then all of a sudden, I get a phone call from my nephew, and he's like, yo, this guy Steve wants to talk to you. I was like, who's Steve? Like, I didn't know who he was. And he's like, oh, this guy, you know, he brought me out to Philly one time, but I think you need to talk to him. So I talked to him and he was like, I'm really impressed, you know, that, you know, I guess he was on a bunch of those calls. Like they were trying to get people on the calls, but they couldn't get the right people on the calls. At the end, you know, I was really impressed how all these people were thanking you, you know, this and that. And he was like, how did you bring all those people? And I guess he had already did like his little research on me or something. And I was like, you know, they're just friends of mine, whatever. So he was like, you know, I'm coming to Boston. I want to sit down and talk to you. So I was like, okay, I'm going to bring Flo and my nephew with me. He was like, fine, bring him. So we went and we had this dinner and it's like super high class place. And me, Flo and my nephew go and we sit down and he brings a friend with him. And this friend doesn't know anything about breaking. He's just like one of his colleagues who, you know, business partners. I don't know what he was. But this guy knows all about us. But he knows nothing of breaking. Like Steve was already into breaking. Like Steve was already into breaking for years. Like maybe like 3 years, like working with people from like Philly, people from D.C. He was already like helping that community out. He just asked us what we wanted. He was always interested in doing events. And that's what he wanted to do. So he was just like, what do you guys want to do? Like, he asked my nephew, and my nephew was like, I just want to, you know, live from dance. I want to live, you know, from teaching. You know, I see what my uncle's been through, you know, and I love to dance, and that's what I want to do. I want to live and dance. And then he asked Flo, and Flo was like, I want to just live from coaching kids. I want to help kids. And then he asked me, and I just was like, I just want you to help us bring our community together for them to be able to live through dance. With your expertise and what you do in business, if you could help us become better business people for us to grow as a community. You know, I wanted to see the community grow together. And he was just like, those are all great ideas, you know. He was like, you know, I just want to do events, you know what I'm saying? But if we could come together and bring the community together, let's build on this. You know, I don't know if he already had something in mind, but after that meeting, he was like, you know, I want you to bring the people you think that should be involved in something. And at the time, You know, we had no mind what it was. I just kind of like made a bunch of phone calls, got a bunch of people involved. A lot of people didn't want to get involved, you know, even from the dancers. None of the dancers wanted, but it was like, people know from doing events, you don't make money. I remember I had a big sponsor that actually gave a competition for $50,000. And I remember just like, he was just like, I'm going to give you $50,000. And I was just like, nah, I want to do a competition to bring people together. I don't even want the money. I just rather you just pay that money to the dancers. I ended up throwing this big $50,000 competition and just like I didn't even make no money. I just basically had them pay off. I didn't even have the money. I just had them pay the money off to the dancers. And then the next year I did another one, which was a little headache. I had to actually do my own, going through different companies and different ideas, raise the money. And I've always like been that person, even through just educating people on dance, educating people on all the up and coming dancers. You know what I'm saying? I was just always that person that just educate them from what I've knew through dance moves, through history. I was just the educator in building that community with the dancers. So a lot of people trusted me. So I started like bringing all these people in. It was hard to bring the dancers in. There was nobody wanted to get involved. But once all the promoters and everybody started, all the dancers started coming in, I just was always like the wanted to be the quiet one. So I just kind of stepped back and just let it grow. And they all helped. I mean, we all helped put it together. It wasn't just me. I was just the key person to bring them together and bring everything together.
Nino, you've always done this since I met you. And since you sent me my first Saucony sneaker to all my crewmates in Floor Angels, you sent us each a pair and we repped those until we wore them out. I just want to tell you this. At the end of the day, it's people like you that create change. People know about Flow Lords. They know about Flavor Squad. From my generation, late 90s, they would go to New York, hit with New York, then go to Boston to y'all to get groomed for LA. Everyone that did that succeeded. And you can see that in all the people that have done that.
I shared, you know what I'm saying? And that's what I was there to do, is share. You know, I'm close with a lot of the younger generation, you know what I'm saying? KML. I mean, those guys were a big inspiration. KML, Abstract. Full Circles brought us together because we were all, I mean, Floor Lords, Boogie Brats, Skill Methods, Phase 2. Those crews were some of the crews that came together with Full Circle Soldiers. We actually met, I think it was 1997, at the Rocksteady Reunion. And we started building from there. Quick Step brought us together, but I had a better communication with a lot of those dancers. Like I really stayed in contact with all of them, just like I was with you guys, with you girls. Like I stayed in contact with all of them. And we would kind of connect all the time. They would come to Boston all the time and we would practice together. We would kind of build together all the time. We would meet in New York all the time. And that connection became big. I was like Float's best friend. You know, me and Float were like brothers. So I had so much knowledge, and Incredible Breakers was still around. I would bring them around all the time. So they got to meet a lot of the people that I talked about. You know what I'm saying? So they also got to meet these guys and learn from them. You know what I'm saying? Because my thing wasn't just about learning from me. It was like in my whole crew, it wasn't about learning from me. It was like, yo, you around all these guys. Like you need to learn from everybody. All the knowledge from when I came up. Yeah, Float was my biggest inspiration, but I knew where his inspiration came. So those were my inspiration. Even though like me and Chino was close, you know what I'm saying? And Brian was close. So I definitely got inspired by them too, but I wasn't around Fast Break all the time. I wasn't around Kid Freeze all the time. I wasn't around Icy Ice all the time. I just knew, you know, when I was around them, we felt like family. That's what I was trying to share with them. And that's what brought them to me, because I was able to share that connection by me doing that and telling them what they needed to do. A lot of the OGs weren't doing that. A lot of the OGs weren't really respecting a lot of the younger generation. They weren't really coming to them. You know, a lot of the OGs were like, oh, shit, these kids, I ain't giving them no respect, even though they knew that these kids were coming up and were about to be the next thing. You know, a lot of OGs felt pressure like, oh, shit. You know, I wasn't pressured. I never was in it for me. I was always in it for someone else to be better than me. And that's what it was for me. Like, so I was able to share that, you know what I'm saying? And that's what brought kids to me, because I was always teaching. Even if they didn't listen, they would come back later and be like, you know what? I should have listened to you earlier, because now I see what you're talking about. I mean, I'm always going to be me. That's who I am. I didn't get into this because of me. I got into this because my brother was basically taking all these kids that he inspired to do the wrong thing. For me, it was like, oh, shoot. If I let these kids follow him, they're going to be into selling drugs. They're going to be into gangs. We already had these kids that we were teaching in our neighborhood. You know what I'm saying? That was looking up to him. I looked up to him. So it was like, oh, shit, I got to start finding places for these kids to follow me to keep them away from him so they could keep dancing and keep them away from the drugs and the gangs. Like, yeah, I love dancing. I'm not going to say I don't love dancing. I don't love what I do. I love what I do to the fullest. But that was my transition in this whole thing.
You spoke earlier about your students, and two of them became professional artists. Your nephew El Nino became a champion and professional b-boy, and your son, Lean Rock, is also a b-boy and one of the most influential break DJs in the world. You gave them the foundation to become the world's best. I feel that it's really special to watch your relationships and your support in them following their passions. El Nino was actually our first guest on our podcast. Is there anything you would like the world to know about your son?
Oh, man. I mean, he's a special human being. He's like me, you know what I'm saying? Like, in a different way. Like, you know, he's a different person, definitely. Like, I think me and Pookie are a lot more alike. He's just special in his own way. Like, I think he's learned a lot from my mistakes, which I'm proud of. And just like Pookie, those are my two best friends. Anything that happens, I go to them first before I even do anything. Like, I go ask them for answers, you know what I'm saying? And they're the ones, and they're younger than me. So, like I said, I'm still a student. And since they were young, all I ever told them was like, look, I want y'all to have more and be more than what I was. And that's all I could tell anybody out there, you know what I'm saying, is be the best that you can and always just be that person to try your best to be different and to be better than the person who taught you. You know, that person that taught you has also made mistakes, and it's about them making the mistakes better for them. You know what I'm saying? Because we all can make mistakes, you know, and also be able to forgive. You know what I'm saying? Because that's how you get through things, is being able to forgive. You know what I'm saying? What happens in your past, keep it in the past. Just keep moving forward. You know, I can't really say more than that. I mean, I tell him every day I love him. You know what I'm saying? And I learn from him, too. You know what I'm saying? I learn from Pookie, too.
Well, one thing I think we need to highlight here is you're one of the examples that show that you always put the crew before you, that, you know, you've taken on a lot of the burden where you've enabled the next generation to really shine. You've used this humility that I think has been a current topic throughout this interview to really enable the next generation to be their best.
I think, you know, you kind of like nailed that. You know what I'm saying? That's what it's really about. I mean, it's not about the older generation. It's not about us. I mean, we're here to give what we learned. If I'm not who I used to be, then I can't share what these kids are learning right now. You know what I'm saying? Like, these kids right now are doing something else. Of course, I could watch these kids and they could do a crazy move and I might be able to add to that, but I can't do what they could do. So I look at them as an inspiration, because what they're doing now is what people weren't doing when I was doing. And I'm grateful to see it where it is now. Like I said, I would have never thought this would even be going on right now. None of us. I don't think like Ken Swift, who's another one of my biggest inspirations, I don't think like those guys would have even thought us growing up we would be here where we at right now. You know, just that it's still around and that we're still involved, that's what I'm grateful for. You know what I'm saying? I'm still able to dance. I'm still able to move. You know what I'm saying? And I'm still able to do what I love. That right there is a blessing. I wake up every day and I'm blessed. So even me sitting in this conversation right here, you know what I'm saying? I'm blessed.
You moved to Hawaii a few years ago. How has the island life impacted you?
You know, the craziest thing in my life, how I look at this whole transition here, is I feel like, you know, I don't know if people want a spiritual, whatever. I feel I've always followed spiritual things in my life. So when I moved here, it was a spiritual movement. I had no clue what was going to happen. I've always been a giver. I've always done for so many people. And I feel I was brought here for life to be about me. Whatever happened in my life happened for a reason. And it happened for this interview you're doing right now. This interview you're doing is about me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I feel. I haven't been about me in so many years. So many years. I can't even tell you how many years I've been giving my soul, just helping other people. And I finally feel like God just said, it's time for you. And I think that's why I'm here. That's why God brought me here. Now, this place, I told you, man, like this place basically made me realize why I was brought here, for life to really be about me. When you notice, especially when you're here, you kind of like really start seeing everything around you. You really start looking at the energy that's around you. You know what I'm saying? And you start realizing certain energy shouldn't be around you. I miss everybody. You know what I'm saying? Like, I miss everybody. You know, that's why I get emotional, because I miss my family. I miss everybody. But, you know, I did a lot. I raised 4 nephews and my own son. I've raised a ton of B-boys. Like, there's many, many, many B-boys I basically raised. Like, I help. I bought kids Pampers, like, for other dancers. Like, I did a lot of different things. And it's not about what you know, I don't mean to bring up what I did, because it's not about what I did. My main thing is I'm here because it's time for me. It's time for Lino. It's time for me to be me. And for me to spend the rest of the time that I have left with me. Not to say that everybody that was around me didn't help, didn't add to my life, because they did. Everybody who was around me, who I live with, who I was part of, who was a part of my life, inspired me in a different way, inspired me to do, to be better. You know what I'm saying? But now it's time for me. It's just my time.
I think it's beautiful. And I'm so grateful, Lino. How do you want to be remembered?
How do I want to be remembered? I want to be remembered for, I think, bringing people together, to work together, to help each other. That's all I want. That's all I can wish for. You know what I'm saying? I wish that we could all come together and grow together and help our younger generation grow and live from what they love. That's what I want people to remember me by.
Where did the name Floor Lords come from?
I finally found out who came up with the name. It was always 3 people that I thought came up with the name, which is this guy, Dave, Cisco, and Mike. I talked to Mike and he told me that Cisco came up with the name. So I always thought it was Mike for some reason. I think because he said it at the meeting. He said, this is going to be our new name. And he was like one of the leaders at the time. You know, it would always be Cisco and Dave always arguing about who came with the name. And, you know, I finally got to talk to the 3rd person, you know, who was in charge. And he didn't take responsibility for it. And he told me who said it. So Cisco, you know, Kid Cisco was the creator of the Floor Lords. And that was only because they wanted me to be a part of MBT, which was Massachusetts Break Team. And at time, like, you had to be loyal to a crew. So you had to either start a crew or, I mean, that was the only way you could be a part of another crew. You know, go against the grain and be a part of MBT or create a whole new crew. And they wanted me to be a part, because what New York Puppeteers brought to MBT when we used to dance in the street was routines. And when my brother and other guys started hanging out, I brought the routines to the crew. I started making up routines with MBT. So they were like, you should just join our crew, you know? And I was just like, can't do that. We got to come up with a new name. We got to have a whole new crew, you know what I'm saying? In order for me to become a part of what you guys are doing. And that's how Floor Laws came about.
And Pro-Am 99, it was my first Pro-Am. Pro-Am was one of the first international events that was exposing people to such a high level of breakers. And it was the first time that I got to see a whole group of females, and most of them were from Floor Lords. And I still see some of these older generation B-girls doing great things in community and great things in society. Did you know that you were inspiring these women, or because they were fierce?
They were their own fierce women. Like, they saw us. The first girl who was down with us was Jeannie. She calls herself Ladybug now. Like, she was like, actually, she was brought to our practice. Flex and Lefty brought her to our practice. She was already dancing, and she came to practice, and she was just like a bolt of lightning. I was just like, yo, who is this girl? You know what I'm saying? Because she had so much energy. And then she brought Michelle in, which was Amazon. And she was a different energy. I was like, oh, shoot. You know what I'm saying? Like, they were just coming to practice with us. And then we was like, you know what? We was dancing with another group that we helped start called Funk Phenomena, which is a big boss. And we helped start them. And then at first we were like, because they didn't know how to break. They were just dancers, but they would come to our practice. We would teach them. But, you know, we was already been started. So we just was showing them love, you know what I'm saying? Like, all right, learn, boom, boom. So I would teach them. And then we were like, all right, let's bring in the Funk Phenomenon. At first, that's all I was really doing. Me and Archie from our crew was Funk Phenomenon was just girls. But for some reason, like, they couldn't make up routines. So me and Archie came in at first and started doing all the choreography for them. And then they only had like a 2-minute piece. So the shows were like, Funk Phenomena, it'll be a 2-minute piece of them, and then the Floor Lords will come out and do like a 10-minute piece. You know what I'm saying? So that's how they built their name, was from us doing that. Rhea was pretty good at picking up, but she always wanted these pretty girls who couldn't really dance. So we had a lot of problems like teaching them. And then after a while, it was just, we felt like we needed to go our separate way. So we ended up leaving, and they ended up coming with us. They actually got Heidi, which was another girl that came in. And then Sapphire came in a little later. She came in maybe like a year later. We actually tried to pick her to be a Funk Phenomenon dancer, one of the first auditions. And they were like, nah. And we were pissed off because he was like, nah, she could dance. Like, no, like, what are you doing? Like, we need every girl that could dance. And they would just pick girls that couldn't dance. So we were like, oh, my God, why are you doing this? Like, we finally found someone that could dance and you can't even pick them, you know? So it was, like, weird for us. That's how the girls came along. And they were just fierce on their own. That was not we instilled into them. They were already, you know, on fire.
Word. Is there anything historically that people should know about Sapphire in Boston?
Oh, man, she's an amazing DJ for sure. Like, she's one of the top B-girls in Boston for sure. Like, she's one of the first that put it down, like, for the B-girls. And, like, that really took it serious. Some came a little after, but she really took it serious. She knows her music. You know, she learned a lot from being around us. She knows her shit. She's a great DJ. She's definitely doing her thing.
What are your thoughts about breaking being in the Olympics?
I'll always be a part of UDEF because I feel like that's something that I'm happy about. You know what I'm saying? Just because people are together. You know what I'm saying? We brought the community together. There's certain things I'm happy about, certain things I'm not. You know what I'm saying? Which everybody can't be happy. You know, those are my opinions about what I want in the community and what I wish the community would be like. But as far as like the Olympics and all those things, like I'm disappointed a little bit. Every time we get something, I feel separation. And that bothers me, man, because I feel like, you know, when we all learn as a community to come together, to grow together, it's really going to take off. And I feel like a lot of different countries see that, but America doesn't. When things are going well and things are coming together, there's always like something that comes up that kind of like tears us down. And when you've been in this community since 1978, like, I would have never thought in my life I would be doing this right now. In my life, dances came in and came out, you know, a month, 2 months. So when you look at it like that, it's like, man, why are we constantly competing against each other when we should be working together and building together? And that's what I wanted with you, Def. What I really wanted was for people to come together and help the younger generation be better promoters, be better listeners, you know, because we're all students. So to the end of the day, like, we're always all going to be students. And, you know, sometimes everybody wants to be the teacher. And it's like, man, like, we all can't teach. You know, we got to just let things happen. And I think that, to me, bothers me a little bit. That's why, like, the Olympics and all that coming up, I support it because I support all the young generation. I want the young generation to win. That's all I care about, is them winning. I want them being able to live off dance. That's all I want, is to see the younger generation, you know, the Grazianos, living from what they love doing. Like, I'm living from what I love doing, but I'm struggling living. You know what I'm saying? I'm struggling. But what gets me past that is because I love it so much that I don't mind struggling, because I'm doing what I'm doing. I love DJing. I love dancing. I love teaching. That, to me, is fine. But I don't want that for the rest. I don't want that for my son and my nephew, or, you know, all the rest of the dancers. I want everybody to win. That's the only thing that, for the Olympics, to me, is what I hope for the scene. You know, yeah, you could have battles. You don't have to be the nicest guy. But in order for people to respect themselves as business people, you know, it's just like McDonald's, Burger King's, Pizza Hut, whatever other pizza, you know, company. I don't even eat none of those foods, so I don't even remember the names anymore. But they could live across the street from each other, make money with each other. You know what I'm saying? They could all grow with each other. And I feel like our community is one of the communities that can't do that. And when you've been in it for so many years, and it's been that same way, it kind of hurts. You know what I'm saying? So I'm looking at life now like love. Like, I just love what people are doing. Like, that's why you don't really see me on social media. Last time I was on social media was when the thing with Legs happened. And I was only coming at it from a community. Like, I just wanted the community to heal from that situation. You know, and people came at me kind of crazy. Then I looked at some of the, like, some people writing some crazy. And I seen some of my friends liking what people were saying coming at me. And I was like, damn. And I was reading. I kept on overreading, like, what I was saying. I'm like, damn, what am I saying that's wrong? You know what I'm saying? So I said, you know what? It's that time where I need to step back and just be to myself and love the community for what it is. You know, and for me to defend myself of what I was saying, was I wasn't defending that person. I was trying to tell the community, we need to come together. We need to fix this. You know, I know from my past, getting help myself. You know what I'm saying? I went through some traumatic things in my life, you know, growing up in hip hop, growing up from my family. You know what I'm saying? I know, you know, what help is all about. Watching my son get help, for him going through his own issues. You know what I'm saying? Me growing up through my own issues. Like, I know there's plenty of people out there, you know what I'm saying, that need help. And everybody makes mistakes. It's how you come back from those mistakes. You know what I'm saying? So that, for me, is all I care about, is like the community figuring out, being able to help each other. We don't have to put each other down, because it's not going to help the community. And I feel like the community is constantly putting each other down. We're not trying to help each other evolve. Like, no one's perfect in this world. You know what I'm saying? And I think we all need to realize we're all going to make mistakes, but we all need to realize that we all need help, and we need to help each other.
Nina, you're such a dope DJ. I feel like we haven't spent enough time in, like, that realm of your awesomeness. Can you give me some of your favorite tracks?
More Bounce is one of my favorite songs. I'm just going to go different eras. Sucker MCs, as far as breaks, Just Begun the Mexican, Melting Pot. Those are my favorite songs to dance to. Apache. I love a lot of the music my son makes. I definitely am a fan of him. Like, I'm a fan of a lot of the music, you know, he makes. As far as, like, rappers, Redman, Method Man, Nas. Nas is my all-time favorite. As far as new artists, J. Cole, I'm all over the place. I love house music too. CeCe Peddleston, Static. I love music. I came up with music. The good thing is I'm able to share that here too. That music is, people love music here, so I'm able to share. And I feel open, man. I feel so open. I even play new music now. Like, I don't just cater to just what I used to play. I mean, that's my favorite. That's what I go to, but I'm able to play new music.
Where can we find you, Lena? Where can we find you?
At Leansky with a double E at the end. Facebook, Lino Leansky Delgado. Leansky FLC on Twitter. YouTube, Lino Delgado YouTube. You can check out my mixes on there. Mixcloud, DJ Leansky.
And what is hip hop to you?
My life! No. Hip hop is to me, what is hip hop to me is culture sharing. Hip hop came from so many different cultures, so many different countries that don't even know to this day. So many different music that it spanned from, like so many just different cultures that hip hop came from that a lot of us don't even understand. We can do our history and understand some of the dance steps came from Africa, from Brazil, from all different. I mean, I can't even name so many different countries because if you go back, there's steps that even come from Russia. You know what I'm saying? Like me growing up being inspired because we always had to be so different. We had to take from so many different things. You know, in order to be respected, like to enter a cypher, you had to make whatever move yours. You know what I'm saying? To enter a circle, you basically had to become Bugs Bunny. You know what I'm saying? Become Daffy Duck. You had to like create like some other character when you walked into that circle. You know, that it comes from so much. So I think it's just culture share, man. I think even now you see it, you know what I'm saying? Like people adding their own to it to become different, to be better, to be someone. So I think just to me, hip hop is culture sharing.
Thank you so much to our guest, Lino Delgado, a.k.a. Leansky, for taking the time and being so open while sharing your perspective with us.
Some of the gems we took away from this interview were...
You will never make yourself better by tearing others down.
If you can't find a good role model, be one yourself. Legacy is not what you do for yourself, it is what you are doing for the next generation.
Kindness, unity, gentleness, humility, and patience are all principles of Aloha.
Our theme music was beatboxed by Dennis de Menis and produced by CD. A big shout out to the brothers from Switzerland.
The background music was produced by Tucky Brano. A big thank you to Abroski from Providence.
Much love to Float. We miss you very much. We send our thoughts to all who love him.
A huge thank you to Ribo, Grazie, and Vincent for the awesome experience in Croatia.
Our podcast basically runs on coffee. To keep our show running, you can support by buying us a coffee through the link in our show notes.
We would love to get your feedback, questions, and any suggestions you might have. You can reach out to us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook at SolidarityLLC or via email solidarityllc@gmail.com.
If you like today's show, please tell a friend about our podcast. Or as Five Dog would say,
tell your mother, tell your father, send a telegram.
In our next episode, we have Rhino. He is a producer, beatmaker, and part of the group called A State of Mind.
Don't forget to subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review.
See you on our next episode. Thank you for listening to our podcast.
No, seriously though, thank you. I am Candy.
I am DJ Razorcut. And this is Souls of Hip Hop.